time for this week's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor, right between Brahma Grill and Fiddlehead Restaurant. Eric Meehan joining us here in our studios, Broadway, Bangor, bearing gifts as always. Good afternoon.
Hello. I actually was thinking to myself as I came over with said gift that this is half the normal gift I bring, you know, in terms of volume. I feel bad.
Yeah, but last week you brought us four times the gift.
That's right. So really, you owe me.
I do. Yeah.
All right, well, anyway. So, yeah, hey, everybody.
By the way, we've taken care of most of that. There's a little left.
Yeah. It's not homework as much as it is pleasure. So everybody, thanks for joining us again. We're here talking for the last time this year about how wine gets you, packaging of wines and things like that. And as Rich mentioned before the break, yeah, we're talking about canned wines today. And basically, we're going to sum up on everything that we've been touching on all month before we launch into one of my favorite topics next month, which is cooking with wine and other goodies, beer, meads, ciders. That's always excellent because, frankly, I really love and feel with my stomach as opposed to any other organ. It's just the heart is overrated, but the stomach is the best.
It never lies.
And not in my case. So, we're talking again today sort of about wine in metal canisters because we're going to talk about cans. We're also going to talk about another phenomenon called kegs. I'm sure you're all familiar with those. But we'll start originally with, why are we talking about these alternative forms of packaging? And for a lot of the similar reasons that we've been talking about alternative or perhaps throwback forms of packaging in beer, and that being, again, cans and metal, that is, why is this a big deal? Well, it's a big deal because light really can ruin booze and in some certain, retail situations or whatever, we try very much to reduce the amount of light in our store that impacts any bottles. But if you can eliminate that entirely and have no UV light going in, your product is going to be a lot better, a lot fresher. Also, we're talking about less oxygen overall, which is leading to less oxidization. First of all, in a can, you're filling it right up to the brim, so you're getting a lot less oxygen than you'd get in a bottle. Remember, the little space between the wine and the cork is called the eulage. That's usually quite a little bit of oxygen, and then there's oxygen, again, trapped in the wine. But then also when you're talking about kegs and larger forms of moving in volume, you're talking about far less oxygen ratio-wise, and so it's much, much better to preserve the freshness and vitality of that product. So that's really why you're wanting to store liquids like this, both in bulk and then in metal, in something that completely blocks light. Liquid ships also cheaper in bulk, so that's a real advantage. And we were talking last week, of course, about the boxed wine, similar thing. As little cubic space, or rather, as much cubic space taken up by the product and as little taken up by oxygen and packing materials is really advantageous. And so the phenomenon that I was talking about before we talked about canned wines is this kegging of wines. Really interesting. It's a phenomenon that sprung up about 5 years ago. Perhaps the best known company that's doing it right now is called the Gotham Wine Project, which does, as the name implies, come out of the New York area. There's advantages and disadvantages to it. Of course, I mean, you're getting, a system just as in beer when you're going to a bar. You're getting carbon dioxide or nitrogen or things like that pumped into it to push the product out. So you're not getting any contact with oxygen. That's fantastic. The problem with it, though, is that no name wineries are putting their wines in kegs. That's not happening yet. You're not seeing a lot of independent keggers or packagers go to these name wineries and say, let us put your wine. And named wineries aren't set up to put wine in kegs. They don't have the machinery. They don't have that sort of system. So there's a real gap that's probably going to be broached at some point. But I'll sort of tell you guys out there in Radioland why this is a problem. The federal government has a real issue with repackaging of alcoholic materials. And this is something I ran up against at a state level a couple of years ago when I was working on getting growler dispensing, so buying a keg of a given beer and then selling it in a smaller portion in growlers. When you start to dispense an alcoholic beverage into a different container, the likelihood of that container not adhering to the strict federal and state rules of the old Surgeon General warning, the alcoholic content, indeed the very producer of the thing, that's kind of a sticky wicket, and that's why you're not seeing as much of you know wines getting into mainstream wines getting into kegs, whereas beer companies, of course, have done kegs from since time immemorial, and it's part of their business plan, so they have that sort of thing set up, which is why beer in kegs is much more, you can get Stone, you can get Maine Beer Company, you can get any beer you want. But it's kind of interesting. So like Gotham Wine Project and all these other guys, they're making their own wines. You can get all the varietals you want, but it's kind of, you're taking what you can get. But it's a really, really interesting way for restaurants to offer glass pours at a much, much better price and at a nice fresh quality. So be on the lookout for that. A lot of good restaurants are doing this, especially. So check it out if you're at a place and they have that. Just sample it and see what you think. In terms of savings, hopefully the restaurants themselves are probably saving about 10 to 15% off the price of that product. So hopefully the glass pour is commensurate. And then we'll talk quickly about cans. So I brought in today probably the most famous because of their rosé being featured in Time magazine and a bunch of other stuff in a can. This is Underwood Cellars. They're from Oregon. For anybody who's been a longtime listener of this segment knows, I really love Oregon wines. They're basically the U.S.'s answer to Burgundy. Pinot Gris is the main white grape. Pinot Noir is the main red grape. They do some Chardonnays and some other nice Alsace sort of varietals. The wine we have today is their Pinot Gris. It does come in a can. And then they have a rosé, which we have not been able to get into Maine yet, but I'm really hoping this year we can bridge that gap. And then they also have a Pinot Noir that comes in a can. Is the wine spectacular? No, it's only okay. And that's part of the other thing right now is that no one's putting anything better than their entry-level wine. I mean, it's really delicious. Don't get me wrong. Underwood wines are really wonderful, and they sell for about $15 a bottle, and they're nice entry-level wines. But the Willamette Valley is known for really, really spectacular Pinot Gris and Pinot Noir. And I think that's going to be, people don't want spectacular Pinot Noir. They want something acceptable and tasty so that they can bring with them on their camping trip and stuff like that. And that's precisely what we have here, nice and acidic and brilliant. The big problem with the canned wines is that they're not a savings. And as a retailer, that's sort of a problem for me. So hopefully as time goes on, and more wines are put in cans, we'll see a little bit the price dropping and it can kind of come into people's life. Another interesting thing is this is 375 milliliters, so this is a half bottle worth. Most wine in cans are like 187 mils, which is like a glass or something, maybe half a glass. It's not really enough to bring into your life in a way that like a nice half bottle is, because we have, of course, a lot of couples who come in and say, oh, my wife doesn't drink, or my wife likes white and I like red, things like that. That's where you love half bottles. This is essentially a half bottle in a can. Really fantastic and just an interesting thing to keep your eye out for as you're perusing the retail shops this summer. I've been getting a lot of notification. Everybody's really jumping on the bandwagon, so I've been getting a lot of notification from a lot of my wholesalers of, rosés in cans and Pinot Gris in cans and Sauvignon Blanc in cans. And it's cool. So check them out.
So this is not significantly cheaper for the producer than putting it in a bottle.
No, I mean, obviously the big problem, and we're sort of touching on it with the kegs and stuff like that, is that wineries are set up to put wine in bottles. That's what they've always done. There are bottling lines. There are used bottling lines. Like there's a whole, secondary and aftermarket for wineries for bottles. And that's, that's sort of the standard. Beer, same thing. There's aftermarkets, there's bottling lines, there's kegging lines, there's canning lines, and there's a whole, if you go to any one of our local brewery friends, they'll probably tell you that at least three or four of the things, if not now, at least when they started, were bought from, Atlantic when they shed stuff, or it's just how it works, and that's great. But until you get some of these more independently minded entrepreneurs who go around, much like George DeBoeuf did with Beaujolais back in the day when he bought an independent bottling unit and put it in a truck and went around to all these little farms, when somebody does that with some of these major wineries and says, I will put your wine in a keg, trust me, we'll do it, and the Federale sign off on it, then that'd be great. And, I think, it just has to become more commonplace.
Well, we seem to be entering an age of deregulation, so we'll knock on wood for that.
Well, there you go. There you go. Perhaps we can power it all by coal.
That's it. Yeah, that's the way to go.
Hey, I want to invite everybody next Friday, April 7th, we are having an event at Bangor Wine and Cheese in conjunction with the Bangor Symphony Orchestra and their British Masters concert. So we will have wonderful British items to taste. We'll have some nice raffles and stuff like that. Come on down, win some cool stuff, taste some good stuff, and benefit our wonderful Bangor Symphony Orchestra. And then on the 13th, we will be teaming with the Bangor Land Trust for our tasting, and we'll similarly do a wonderful raffle for some really interesting outdoor guided trips, things like that, and taste some wonderful goodies and benefit that. So some good stuff to come on out, support, and we'll be talking, as I mentioned, next month about cooking with alcohohol, and that always turns out real well.
And so, before we go, because I love me a good Moody Blues reference.
Ah, yes.
Days of Maple Past. In 15 seconds, tell us about that.
Wine of the Week is the Vin de Dailly. We tried the white online here, or on the radio here. That's the red Pinot Noir from the Willamette Valley. Wonderful natural wine. And then our maple balsamic vinegar, the Sugar Shack maple, is on special this week. 10% off. That is our featured specialty product. Check it out. It's really good.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor. Thanks, Eric.
Cheers.